Welcome to Healthy Mom, Healthy Baby Tennessee, a podcast brought to you by the Tennessee Initiative for Perinatal Quality Care. TIPQC exists to improve health outcomes for mothers and infants in Tennessee through our quality collaborative that will identify opportunities to optimize maternal and infant outcomes across our state and is funded under a grant contract with the state of Tennessee. The Healthy Mom, Healthy Baby Tennessee podcast is designed for medical professionals and for patients and families across the state. We will focus on all aspects of the perinatal period with special attention to reducing our maternal mortality rate. This podcast is brought to you through a cooperative agreement with the Alliance for Innovation on Maternal Health.
Welcome to the Healthy Mom, Healthy Baby Tennessee podcast, brought to you by the Tennessee Initiative for Perinatal Quality Care. I'm Brenda Barker, the TIPQC Infant Medical Director, and we're excited today to have Jackie Moreland from the Tennessee Hospital Association join us. Jackie is the Clinical Quality Improvement Specialist at the Tennessee Center for Patient Safety at THA, and she's been there for the last 13 years. As such, and as a nurse, she's able to work with all hospitals across the state doing quality improvement work, including medication safety, sepsis, OB and infant projects, as well as many others. We're so honored to have you join us today. Jackie, welcome.
Thank you, Brenda. I appreciate you inviting me, and I look forward to being able to share with everybody about some of the work that we've been able to do at THA to help reduce maternal mortality in the state.
Thank you, Jackie. Tell us first a little bit about you and how you got involved in this work.
So when I first came to THA 13 years ago, the Hospital Association was already involved in a partnership with the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, or CMS, called the Hospital Engagement Network, which everyone lovingly called HEN, or H-E-N. It was a national partnership that was focused on helping hospitals improve patient care and outcomes across lots and lots of topics, but one of those topics was reducing early elective delivery. And so as part of that initiative, my senior vice president at the time assigned early elective delivery reduction to me, and that's how I first came to know you and this incredible staff at TIPQC. Began to really work closely with the Department of Health and also the March of Dimes, because the four of us worked together very diligently and made some great strides to make sure that infants weren't being electively delivered between 37 and 39 weeks, unless, of course, there was a medical indication for either the mother and or the infant. And then, of course, from that work, we've continued to partner whenever we could, because, you know, when you collaborate, you can do more together than you can by yourself. And right now, I know you've done a lot to help reduce maternal mortality in the state. We at THA, our most recent work has also been focused on maternal mortality reduction.
Since we have so many maternity deserts across the state, you guys at the Hospital Association have done quite a bit of work around preparation for our rural areas and our non-delivery hospitals should a delivery occur at one of those. Tell us more about that.
Yes, thank you, Brenda. And you're correct. Our most recent maternal grant concluded in the fall of 2024. And indeed, it was focused on maternal mortality reduction. And our focus was on non-delivering hospitals because we just felt like it was a good time to bring them into the fold. Again, TIPQC was already doing a lot of great work with the delivering hospitals in the state, and with the growing maternal deserts that we have in Tennessee, we just felt like the timing was right for this. So even though we have a fair number of hospitals in the state, we do still have counties without a hospital of any kind. But then sometimes we have counties that also may have a hospital, but they may not offer obstetrical services. So knowing that, and then knowing that since I began with THA in 2012, we've had 11 hospitals in the state who delivered babies that either closed their doors or closed their obstetrical service line, which made areas of the state with the capacity to be prepared to deliver a baby even less. So on top of not knowing that, I also have been a member of the Tennessee Maternal Mortality Review Committee since it began in 2017. And we know in reviewing those cases, and it's been reflected in our annual reports to the legislature, we've lost pregnant and postpartum women, both in delivering and in non-delivering hospitals. So knowing that the two leading causes of pregnancy-related death in Tennessee are cardiovascular conditions and hemorrhage, we felt like that would be an area of focus that we should work with our rural hospitals that may not be delivering hospitals at the current or delivering babies at the current time. So when we first were told about this grant, of course, one of the first things we did, which is what we've traditionally done at THA, is we got on the phone with you at TIPQC to see if there were ways that we might could support the work that you were already doing with delivering hospitals, because you already had a lot in place around hypertension and pregnancy, which cardiovascular diseases of pregnancy, preeclampsia, eclampsia, is our leading cause of pregnancy-related death in Tennessee. So with that being said, you already had some great work going on with blood pressure cuffs and simulation and had A1 magnets going out and resources for hospitals. And so it didn't look like at the time that there was a whole lot more that we could do to help you with that work. And so knowing that our deserts have grown, knowing that the numbers of maternal deaths in Tennessee remain higher than we'd like to see them, and knowing that not all of our hospitals have the resources that they need to safely deliver in the event that there is a delivery or a pregnant woman that shows up at their door in labor, we felt like working with non-delivering hospitals might be the way to go. And so we put together a plan for a maternal mortality reduction project, and we recruited hospitals. I'm happy to say that despite the fact the recruitment started early in COVID, we had 20 non-delivering hospitals that signed up for this work, and we did not lose any of them throughout the period of time that COVID was even at its worst. And so for those of you who know me, you know that I've worked on several topics over those 13 years related to maternal and infant care here at Tennessee, but I am not an OB or a peds nurse by background. And since education was going to be a big component in preparing our non-delivering hospitals, we partnered with the perinatal educators in the state for their assistance in training the emergency department staffs who were going to be participating in this work. And they all graciously agreed to help. So again, we were able to recruit 20 non-delivering hospitals. We were able to retain them. We had all the perinatal educators. And because we had several hospitals that were recruited that were parts of larger systems, and those larger systems also had perinatal educators, we recruited those educators as well. So we had 20 hospitals and 8 educators, which was awesome. So we were able to offer a lot of time and resource to them. And as part of that, we developed some educational resources that they were able to use when they were training and to leave behind.
Yeah, that's super. I know y'all have worked really hard with those 20 hospitals, and we really appreciate that work that you've done. You also had some focus on hemorrhage, as you mentioned, one of our top causes of maternal mortality in that arena. Go ahead and tell us more about that as well.
Sure. So we did also focus on postpartum hemorrhage, but the majority of our work did involve cardiovascular issues of pregnancy. We were able with the grant to supply each of those 8 educators with 2 simulators. One was for blood pressures, and that way they could simulate variations in blood pressure. And they had speakers so they could hear what the staff member that was trying to demonstrate proper blood pressure cuff usage would be like. We also were able to provide them with a pretty robust postpartum hemorrhage simulator so that they could go into the facilities and be able to demonstrate what that simulation would look like. And these simulators were nice because a lot of the postpartum hemorrhage simulators required 2 people, one to wear the simulator, one to run the simulation. And this was one where they could do this on their own without having to have a second person. Because a lot of these small hospitals have very small staffs. you may be looking at one ED physician and one or two nurses. And so if you're asking a staff member to help with that simulation training, then they're really not getting the full benefit of the simulation training while it's going on. So we felt like that was important. In doing this work, and I just want to, again, give kudos to Brenda and the staff at TIPQC for this. You were offering simulation training to the delivering hospitals in the state, and you were kind enough to allow us at THA to invite and have those 8 educators who were working with us to attend those summer simulation trainings as well. And the reason that was important is, we all know that when everybody's trained the same way, then we all do things the same way so that hopefully our outcomes are going to be similar. And so for those 8 educators, they were so excited and so blessed to have been able to receive that education. And it helped us to know that when they were going into the non-delivering hospitals to teach, that they were teaching the same simulation exercises in the same manner that our delivering hospitals were being taught. So I want to thank you again for that. On top of going in and doing the one-on-one education with the emergency department staff, we felt like it was really, really going to be important to leave behind some resources, because I don't know about most of you, but I can learn things, but if I don't utilize certain information on a regular basis, I may not remember it as well. And so with that being said, we developed a notebook with reference sheets, assessment forms, checklist for preeclampsia, eclampsia, and hypertensive disorders of pregnancy. Part of that notebook also included pages out of the California toolkit on how to take an appropriate blood pressure, because oftentimes appropriate blood pressures are not taken. And if you don't take an appropriate blood pressure on a pregnant or postpartum woman, you may miss an opportunity to get her treated. The treatment algorithms for labetalol, nifedipine, and hydroxyline were also in there. So they didn't have to worry about what to use to treat them, what dose, how to treat, and when to transfer. We also developed notebooks on obstetric hemorrhage ready references so that they would have those as well, to include what they needed to have available in their labs. And again, make them aware that transfer to a higher level of care was a priority. Because notebooks can oftentimes be put on a shelf and forgotten about, even though they're nice to have, we also developed some posters using QR codes to help make it easy, because most everybody in this day and age has a smartphone. So we developed a poster to remind providers, don't ignore the signs of cardiovascular and hypertensive disorders in pregnant and postpartum women. And so there was a QR code for obtaining accurate blood pressures. There was one for recommended cuff sizes. There was one for the checklist for eclampsia, preeclampsia, and hypertensive emergencies. And then there were QR codes for each of the 3 medications for treatment, be it labetalol, hydroxyline, or immediate release oral nifedipine.
And I've actually seen those posters at hospitals, and they were thrilled to have them. It's a great resource and tool for our hospitals. How could they access that from you all?
So that poster is available on our website, our THA website. And if you go to THA's website at THA.com, you will also find that you can click on the icon for the Tennessee Center for Patient Safety and get to our OB-related resources that way. So it is posted there. And again, they're free to print. We did have those posters laminated because, you know, everything in a hospital has to be wiped down on a regular basis.
So we will have all of that available in the show notes as well, so you can jump in there and find these resources.
Great. Thank you, Brenda, for adding that in there. I did also want to share that we utilized the A1 maternal early warning symptoms magnets. We distributed those pretty regularly to these 20 hospitals in English and Spanish, because those are the 2 most common languages in the state that we found. We also purchased and distributed the urgent maternal warning signs posters that ACOG originally put together. I liked them because they were colorful. There weren't a lot of words. And again, there's a QR code so that if a mom or a family member or just somebody in the community who had an interest about what are early maternal warning signs, they could click that QR code and get more information. So I really liked those posters. It was also a way to keep it in front of providers so that they would remember to look for those things and to ask those questions and to assess those mothers. So we did utilize magnets. We did utilize a lot of posters. And I'm hopeful that that will help to get the word out in communities that may not have a hospital or may not have a hospital that delivers babies. Also knowing that in Tennessee, we have a lot of maternal deaths that occur either because of mental health, substance use abuse, intimate partner violence, or one or all of those are coupled with some underlying health problems that the mother may have. And so to that end, we also wanted our hospitals to assess and document if they had screened these women for mental health, substance use, or intimate partner violence whenever they were presenting to their emergency department. And to that end, we made a poster for that as well. And we used QR codes on that poster as well. And like the cardiovascular poster, that poster is also available on our website.
Fabulous. Thank you again for all your work on this project. As you noted, this has been concluded, but all those resources are available. Again, you can find those in our show notes. I wanted to ask you if there were some lessons learned, some takeaways other hospitals might be interested in from this project. If you had a hospital spotlight, something that one of the hospitals did, that would be wonderful for our other hospitals to consider doing.
Absolutely, Brenda. So looking at lessons learned with the project, one of the educators in the project out of one of the systems that we utilized realized that even though she worked with both their delivering and their non-delivering hospitals within their system to do routine education, she realized that in the hospitals that deliver, the emergency department staff, typically once they realize someone's pregnant or has recently delivered, hustle them on up to the OB unit for assessment, and they really could stand the same amount of education and resources as the non-delivering hospitals to make sure that they were appropriately triaging and looking at those women as well. And as far as a hospital spotlight, out of those 20 hospitals that were part of our project, I'd love to point out Macon Community Hospital in Fayette, Tennessee. They are a standalone critical access hospital. Their leadership felt like it was important enough not just to take part in the perinatal training for maternal mortality reduction, but they also utilized the neonatal educator in their region for neonatal resuscitation training. And then on top of that, Leanne Bilbrey, their chief nursing officer, and Heather Turner, their ED nurse manager, spearheaded creating a dedicated cart in their emergency department because they often have pregnant women arrive in labor. And if they were to have an emergent delivery, that cart includes an emergency vaginal deliveries guidelines notebook, and it has step-by-step protocols for delivery and also for postpartum emergencies. They worked very closely with a couple of delivering hospitals to make sure that they had dotted all their I's and crossed all their T's. That cart, I've seen it, is equipped with supplies both for routine and emergency scenarios, such as umbilical venous catheter trays. And they purchased not just one, but two JADA devices for postpartum hemorrhage in the event they should have two pregnant women come in, emergently deliver, or come in immediately postpartum in hemorrhage and need another device before they could replace it. They also have infant scales and for weighing, and all of their staff members go through regular training and regular simulation training so that they feel confident and prepared to use the resources. And in visiting this hospital and learning about this cart, that staff is so excited to feel like they're prepared. And they have the maternal early warning symptoms, signs up, the assessment posters up, like Brenda was talking about. They've really gone above and beyond.
Wonderful. And that would be great if we replicated that across the state. So kudos to them and for leading the way to really help us prepare for those emergent deliveries in non-delivery hospitals. Congratulations for the project, for your participants that went above and beyond as well. I just wondered if you had other thoughts for our patients and families who might find themselves in this type of a situation, an emergency delivery in a non-delivering hospital.
I think at the end of the day, and of course I speak not just for myself, but for the Hospital Association, that all of our hospitals in Tennessee are doing their absolute best to care for every patient that comes to them for care. Although sometimes I think it's important to realize that not every hospital is equipped to provide every level of care for every situation. And so if you come to a hospital, you may find that they're going to start your treatment, but then need to transfer you to a higher level of care because that's what's the best for you and your unborn child.
Absolutely. And thanks for, again, all you all have done to prepare those hospitals for our moms and babies. Well, thank you again so much for talking with me today. Is there anything else you would like to add before we wrap up?
I just want to thank you, Brenda, for the opportunity to share the project and for our continued collaboration as we all work to make Tennessee the very best place for our mothers and their infants.
Thanks again for joining me today.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Healthy Mom, Healthy Baby Tennessee, presented by TIPQC. TIPQC is funded under a grant contract with the state of Tennessee. Healthy Mom, Healthy Baby Tennessee is brought to you through a cooperative agreement with the Alliance for Innovation on Maternal Health. Do you have ideas for a future guest or topic, or even have a question you would like answered on upcoming episodes? Visit www.tipqc.org, that's TIPQC.org, and click on podcast to submit suggestions and questions to our podcast team. Make sure to subscribe to our podcast to be the first to know when new episodes are available and find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube to stay in the loop with our active projects and other relevant news relating to perinatal health in Tennessee.